We are so surgical, like we're so good as a unit in delivering that value that when we show up with business, that business is going to convert for our partner. And so I'm less concerned about delivering 1,000 leads if 10 of them convert. I'd much rather send 6 leads where 4 convert and everyone's really happy and it's get those really impactful stories early on in the partnership.
Howdy, partners, and welcome to another episode of the Howdy Partners podcast, where we give you tactical insights so that you can execute in your role. Today, we're going to talk about the step-by-step for GTM success. Before I dive into that, though, Tom, how you doing? How you been?
I am doing well. Getting ready for the holidays, flying back to Michigan for a couple weeks. So we've got like a petri dish of germs in our house. Getting healthy is going to be key before we travel. So in all, we're doing all right.
Nice. My gross positivity tells me that any sickness before the holiday is good because you boost your immune system and then you won't get sick on the days that matter. So I'm just getting over a stomach bug myself. So I feel that to be true, especially because I'm going on a trip to Portugal, which is going to be exciting. My first time there.
So amazing.
Yeah. Going there for a week.
Very cool.
Yes. And I'm not the only one who is a world traveler. Today, we're joined with Matt Dornfeld, and he's been on the podcast before. He shared amazing insights on the previous episode. And today, like I mentioned, we're going to be talking about GTM success. Matt was telling us just before this that he used to be a tour guide, and you've been to Cuba, it was 16 times, was it?
Yeah. So I used to be, before I got into tech, I used to be a tour guide, and I used to basically run the experiences for travelers coming from New York City who wanted to explore the island. And then, yeah, if you can imagine, I was basically commuting between the East Village and in Manhattan to Havana on a pretty much a weekly basis for almost 6 months. So, you know, I was just very wild. I ended up on 60 Minutes at one point as well during that experience because I was the random tourist guy drinking rum on the highway. And, you know, I haven't secured my IMDb credit yet, but I'm sure that's something I'll achieve over the next year or so. But it's good to be back. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, all that will be a positive spin too, especially with you being on 60 Minutes. I'm excited to hear more about that.
Yeah, happy to talk about it. But I love it there. I still advise people who like to go and travel to Cuba. So if either you guys find yourselves interested in a new experience, I'm happy to toss over some special notes.
It makes me think, no wonder you're so good at partnerships, that you have got so many great experiences, make you so personable. And I can only imagine it requires very good people skills to do that as a full-time job.
People skills and patience, baby. That's all it takes.
There we go. So like I mentioned today, we are talking about GTM success. I want to start with a story. Matt, I want you to tell us about a story about either, you know, a big deal or a volume of deals that you closed in your partnership's career. And then we'll break it down step by step as if it is the play-by-play steps 4 through 5. So tell me about that story of that deal that your team won, and then we'll get into how exactly you did that.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, what's fun about sourcing opportunities in my world is that, you know, the platform that I present today, so Feedonomics, and it's an enterprise data feed syndication platform. So we help brands expand to new channels and distribute their products in special ways on those channels to drive performance. And so when we think about sourcing major new partnerships today, it's really thinking through, you know, what kind of relationship in the industry would help our clients or our future clients expand and grow really, really quickly. And so there's a whole host of these options in the world, right? Today, you've got, you know, Walmart has new programs and Amazon has new programs. Google has new programs. And not all of the programs they offer will be great fits for what your clients may want. And so that's a lot of the legwork that goes into figuring that out is what my team works on at the early stages. And so, you know, when I'm working on a new program or, you know, some of the ones I've worked on in the past, I spend a lot of time thinking through, you know, why should we have a relationship in the first place? Like, what is this partner's story? What are they trying to sell? What's the value they bring to clients in the world? Why do people work with them today? And then I'm going to map those experiences and that success to what I know to be successful, like how we gotten here and what are our clients need to get to that next stage of growth as well. And so hopefully I'm able to draw enough parallels where it's worth that first conversation, the second conversation, and third. And along the way, we're building really concrete business cases that involve a whole bunch of people, both internally and externally, to help bring that partnership to life. So in my case, you know, most of my partner relationships, those deals take 1 to 2 years in most cases. And I typically find myself working on projects that are worth, you know, somewhere in the mid six figures or low seven figures. And so the business case and kind of the alignment of internal teams, I find to be almost more critical than the conversation I have with partner prospects themselves. So the way we rally teams around an opportunity here is we write an executive summary. It's the step zero for us where every conversation starts with an executive summary. We're using that document as a living document that evolves over time and ultimately incorporate a lot of different feedback from a lot of different teams to demonstrate the value and the why we're pursuing this opportunity over the months or even years to come. So in that document, we're capturing all sorts of stuff. We're capturing points of contact around the organization who might influence a go-to-market. That might be marketing, it might be sales, operations, product, finance, legal, you name it. And then we're also incorporating data points and information that we're able to collect both from our partner network. So maybe agency or channel partners that might have an opinion on it, or even the partner prospect themselves. So in the case of a large marketplace platform that we've worked with in the past, they're rolling out ancillary services all the time, new fulfillment programs, new ads programs, and so forth. And so it's incumbent upon me to both go really deep with that partner to understand how do they implement their solution today? How do clients onboard right now? How fast is that process? What are the gotchas in that process? And then document all of those things. And then in parallel to that, we're also leveraging other third parties, other partners to almost counteract or balance those perspectives that we're getting from the prospect themselves. So now you can think about it almost like a tribe mentality where I'm going to collect information from one place and then distribute it and have that conversation elsewhere as well to validate the perspective as we go about building the business case. And so over time, we're really able to say, okay, we've heard all we've heard from the partner prospect. We've also heard from our partner community who's similarly validated the opportunity and helped us build a business case. And then internally, we've met with all the relevant stakeholders to rally them around this go-to-market idea that will be coming in the future. So that way, as we progress, we get through legal, we make really material progress, there aren't any surprises. We've met with legal, met with product, we've excited the sales team, got our marketing team ready to go. And so that way, when we're ready to push go and launch that press release and actually bring this thing into the world, everyone is on the same page. And that accelerates all the other processes, you know, that would happen afterwards, which is actually sourcing deals, getting people excited over time, and ultimately building a flywheel of success that encourages, you know, more and more clients to onboard for that solution as well.
So clearly step zero is so critical. And no wonder you were talking, you know, so much about that because it then sets the course for everything else. So I'm really glad that you did that because without that, you have to do some backtracking and, you know, I'm actually experiencing this myself where we are having to do a little bit of backtracking because people started the partnership and then everyone's excited, they're taking action, but then immediately people are like, I'm confused. What's the value? What am I doing? Why am I doing it? All that kind of stuff. So, all right, take us through what step, you know, one through X looks like after step zero is established. And I know in our last episode, we did talk about alignment and how to really drive that internal engagement. So what is step one once there is that press release deployed? What's next? How do you rally the team? And what are the actions that sellers, marketers, et cetera, are doing on your team?
Yeah. So ideally, you know, heading into the press release, it's not just the press release that's being launched into the world. Hopefully there's an entire plan built around bringing this partnership to the ecosystem. And so for us, but that translates into a lot of block and tackle things. So like your social media posts or maybe a series of events that you may have coming up, like national conferences where you may, you know, have people go to certain booths and like really simple things. They're almost check the box kind of activities, but they have to be done and they should be done and done really well. And so for us, typically we've got a partner marketer who's really leaned in from early stages of the partnership. So that way they're able to translate the thing we're bringing to market in a way that is also built into the voice of our brand and our business. And similarly, those other ancillary teams, they're leaning in to make sure that their pieces are well represented as well. So if we consider, you know, called stage zero is building the executive summary. Stage one is collecting all those inputs, building the business case and getting all the pieces in order. Step two is now we're starting to actually build, right? We've gotten the green light. We're going through legal. We're getting the other ancillary teams all bought in on vision. And then step three, at this point, I've got to keep track of these things. Now we're really getting to the stage of, okay, we've got all the things covered. We've got all the teams bought in. Now we're ready to actually press go. And to your point, Will, I think this is oftentimes where partnerships also start to fall over. There's all this prep work that goes into standing up this really awesome thing. You hit go and then people take their foot off the gas. And so for me, you know, when I look at launching something, I know that it's actually the step 3, 4, 5, 6, 7,000 into the future, the after stuff. The hard part is what happens after you launch the partnership. And that's where the value starts to come out. So for us, oftentimes we have a rhythm of the business that we like to follow. So we actually have a document that outlines all the key meetings, key stakeholders in those meetings. We have a PMO who actively tracks the notes, chases people down, make sure that the right activities are followed up on a certain cadence and delivered. And so that way we're able to hold ourselves really, really accountable to delivering success over time. So I think, you know, in our world, there's so many distractions, so many variables, new projects pop up all the time. And so the ability to stay focused on, you know, why you're getting into this thing in the first place is just so critical to delivering the value that you ultimately need to represent to your business. And I think, you know, different teams of different sizes will handle that very differently. In our case, just given the size of our deals, you know, we've worked with go-to-market teams that are sometimes 40 or 50 people large. So it can oftentimes involve a lot of different departments and skill sets that you have to keep aligned during the duration of whatever you're launching.
Will and I were just talking about this last on a podcast that will hopefully be launched or go live soon. But it's funny, like when you talk about the idea of, it's not even half the work is getting to like step three or getting to the point of like going live and like launching. There's so much more work to keep interest and keep like level set. It's the idea of like that honeymoon phase. Like I see it a lot in channel partnerships where it's like you get super bought in up front before you even sign as a partner. And then all of a sudden it's like the momentum goes downhill. So I'm curious from your end, Matt, how do you ensure that you drive more of like the level playing field to make sure that like people are invested and focused on the right things to get to that launch point? But then even more importantly, it's like, how do you lay out the path for success and buy in so that people don't fizzle out once you get past that point?
Yeah, I think people need to see the success in order to stay committed to it. I mean, we're revenue minded people. So, you know, we all have targets and things we got to hit. And I think there is, you know, there are hints of laziness that can come out, even subconsciously, because it is such a monumental thing, right? You're creating something out of nothing. You all this crazy work to get it there. Now it's out in the world and you're like, okay, great, exhale, right? And some people just, that's it, right? It just falls off from there. So for us, the way we've done that, especially more recently, I'd say over the last like 6 months, we focused a lot on introducing beta testers, like clients, into the partnerships even before we're really ready to blow something out. So, you know, in our world, that might mean sending a lead or multiple leads to a marketplace partner. And, you know, the client who's being introduced knows that this integration doesn't exist today. We're evaluating an opportunity. We think this is a pretty cool, you know, opportunity to see growth. And we really recommend this client being a fit for that solution. So we're going to make the intro in good faith because we're just trying to do the right thing. And then ultimately, that client recognizes the value and they're willing to invest. We've excited our product team with that activity because now they're going to say, oh, okay, someone's actually going to use this integration. We've excited the marketing team because now they have a story to tell. We've excited our operations team because they're going to understand how to onboard this client to this place in the future and then build a template to make sure that, you know, in my case, we're a full service team. So there's a lot of activities we're doing to help a client through onboarding and success and all that stuff. So we're kind of lifting the lid on the future a bit to give people the ease of mind to know, yeah, this is actually super doable. And if we invest now to do this the right way, we're going to make this so much easier for really large retailers or clients in the future. And for us, that's actually worked really, really well because now we can actually stagger our go-to-market and say, we need a beta client or 5 beta clients by this date. And doing that will then unlock these other teams to do this piece of the broader go-to-market plan. We'll layer those outputs into the larger plan from there. And you kind of create this flywheel of success where people are actually starting to see clients use a thing. And that's what gets us on the partnership side super excited, because we're creating these ideas and then we're seeing people actually recognize real life value from the things we're doing in really short windows, which I think creates an ecosystem of excitement that, you know, almost requires that buy-in over time. And that's what keeps people motivated.
I'm curious about how granular the preparation gets and like what your team is doing specifically. And what I mean by that is the partnership is, you know, in motion, the PR is released, and now the sales team is taking action on whatever leads from, you know, maybe it's an event or a piece of content that's released. How far does your team go? Are you writing email templates? Are you writing the cadence? Or like who's taking on that responsibility? And what I'm thinking about is, you know, a lot of sales people don't always know how to engage with partner leads, and they treat it like it's their own lead or like a regular marketing lead, but they of course need to be treated differently. So I'm curious what your team is doing to prepare them and like how much preparation is being done in order for all of those programs to be successful. What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, we are ridiculously granular. We care a lot. Every single deal follows the process. So for us, you know, there's a lot that goes into getting that first lead, of course. And so, you know, we're working with the CSM org in the success team to figure out who might be a fit for this thing. You know, who's someone that would actually find value out of this program. In that case, we're writing the template that that org is using to reach out to those clients. So we're walking them through the sequence of how many times they should touch that client. Should they call the client? Are there certain talking points they should really double down on when they're in that conversation? From there, there's a tracker where all of that information is then deposited into. That tracker is available to both our internal teams and the external partner. So the partner can see the stage, who is engaged, what happened during that conversation. Then we're going to constantly evolve and track on that progress directly in a visible tracker for both teams. So we're very transparent with our partners, even ones that we haven't fully launched with yet. So they understand that, you know, hey, this isn't that easy. Like, we're going to put in a lot of effort up front to make sure that y'all are getting exactly what you're hoping to see. Once you have that visibility and trust, it starts to build over time. So that way they're actually going to start being more receptive. That partner will be more receptive to our recommendations. Hey, this kind of information, not translating very well for this kind of cohort. Let's adjust. And so we'll go in, just focusing on content for a moment. We'll go really deep on figuring out what is the sequence of words that are going to make a difference in delivering the message to this client at this time. Beyond that, you know, it's the same kind of thinking, I'd say, across everything we would do. So with marketing events, we have a very set SOP and expectation of when things get delivered, when things get submitted, how they should be submitted to our teams, when they're discussed and evaluated for further discussion from, you know, so we'll meet on a go-to-market sync every Tuesday. We'll talk about all the inputs that we've received from the team. We'll then go through that activity over and over and over until we're able to really figure out, okay, do we have buy-in from all the right people? Do we have all the clients engaged in exactly the ways that they should be? And then now, are we actually seeing attach? Are we seeing people actually engage with the things that we'd expect them to engage with? And so on one hand, it's almost annoyingly deep because there's like so many details that you have to track. But on the other hand, we are so surgical. Like, we're so good as a unit in delivering that value that when we show up with business, that business is going to convert for our partner. And so I'm less concerned about delivering 1,000 leads if 10 of them convert. I'd much rather send 6 leads where 4 convert and everyone's really happy, and it's get those really impactful stories early on in the partnership. I think to your point about, you know, different teams engaging with leads in different ways, part of that SOP building is a cross-functional effort that includes buy-in from the sales leadership. So sales is a very valuable component of how we deliver new programs to the market, whether with prospects or upsells of existing. So I need their lean in just as much as I would need marketing or legal or anybody else in the organization. So fortunately at our, you know, company here, we don't really have that issue. We have an excellent sales team with leadership that gets it. And so it's, there's no scenario where I would bring a new partner program to market that our sales team and our enablement leads and all the folks that would involve, I'd involve for message delivery, don't have a say in how we're going to bring this thing to a reality. If you're a partner who doesn't have that level of trust or communication, like go work on that. That's a great place to start, because having that relationship, that trust built internally, is just going to unlock so many opportunities and speed, frankly, over time, in a way that, you know, you may not be able to even recognize those benefits today.
Yeah, it's funny how, to me, like it kind of goes, at least from my experience, it goes against like the adage of like, if you're starting programs or your program's been in existence, like you're trying to attract the mass with like very broad evergreen strokes, versus this sounds like surgical, tactical, step-by-step, like no step missed. So I'm curious to know like how much of this is templatized, for lack of a better term, or maybe like the idea of it's templatized, but you can kind of pick and replace from like a product shelf or activity shelf, versus, you know, off the cuff, like how custom are these kind of builds and partnerships?
Yeah. You know, I had a coach of mine, you know, I was going through a really tough moment where it was just, you know, aggressive targets, some things missed in a way that I hoped that they wouldn't have. And he gave me some really simple advice, which I tend to find is the most impactful, which is just, you know, focus exclusively, religiously on the things that you can control.
Yeah.
I can't control my target. I can control the activities that should lead to revenue that help me get to that target and exceed it in most cases. But I'm not going to change the number, right? Like if someone says you need to hit 100K, I'm going to go find as much as I can to get to that point, but I'm going to do it in a way that, you know, involves me doing the right motions to lead to that result. So to your point, there are certain things you can templatize. Like there are general approaches to conversations or questions you should ask to understand, is there alignment here, you know, with this future partner? So with like a marketplace partner, for example, like an Amazon or whomever, I'm going to ask them a series of questions that says, how do you onboard someone today? When there's a support issue, how do you address that? Are there subsidies or other things you give to clients to accelerate or lead a certain kind of behavior, you know, or incent a certain kind of behavior? And so in this long list of questions, which probably to them feels like I'm interviewing them, I'm taking all those little inputs, because it's actually going to frame how I enable my sales teams, how I enable my operations teams to go and deliver success for this partner internally. And so we just spend such an inordinate amount of time upfront learning how a partner operates, that by the time we go to market, like we should already be a near extension of that partner's team. If we're not, I've fallen short and haven't asked enough questions to unlock my teams to be able to deliver that kind of value. So you could always templatize an email, but the reality is like the template should just say paragraph, paragraph, three bullets, paragraph again, thank you.
Yeah.
And you know, that's cool. That works if that saves time. But for us, I don't know if there's certain data points that speak to the value that happens, you know, after you've adopted this thing, that's very helpful to know. Or if there's a certain kind of financial incentive that might exist to incentivize adoption or some sort of behavior, we'll want to bake that into maybe the upfront of the first email. And then over time, we do have a standardized track for enablement internally with education. So you will have battle cards that we build. We'll have sales sheets and other things that are interviewed our sales team before. They've told us exactly the way they like to receive information. And so we'll translate inputs from the partner into systems that our team has already told us they'd be willing to accept information from as well. So for my team, that might mean some extra work because we're translating across different teams. But if I'm able to give a sales team a document that looks exactly like the kind of thing they would use to close a deal, I'm already three steps ahead versus taking a sheet of paper, cutting it and pasting it, handing it to them and expecting results. So I think you can take some creative license with it as far as what might work for your organization. But for us, we've done so much upfront work to understand how everyone likes to work that we're able to just, you know, flip and kind of mold to the audience we're trying to speak with to make sure that we get the most value that we can out of them.
Amazing. I am geeking out about the process, the templates, and you mentioned SOPs. I'm just like, that is my language, and I've been doing that internally as well. Definitely not to the level that that you've been doing it. Mine's like 3 Slack messages, not events or battle cards or anything like that. But we're a much smaller company, and program's just starting, so I have much to go for in terms of building. But I love the focus on rigor and the ability to bring clarity to all teams involved, because that's going to drive action. Like you mentioned, it's not just some copy and paste that you give to the sales team. It's the information exactly how they want it. And it looks familiar because they already use that same kind of thing every day. I love it. That is genius. Tom, any other thoughts before we wrap up with our tactical takeaway?
Well, my final thought is just listening, Matt, to you and how you try and like the information gathering that you do on the front side. You know, I initially thought like maybe that isn't applicable elsewhere, but like when I think about it, it's super applicable in the beginning phases of any partner program, because like one, it's not too much of an ask. Now, granted, I know you said like your intake might be a little bit more. They're like, whoa, they're really probing me. But like in any sense, what it gives me thought to is by asking for a little bit more information, like if you're probing agencies from a channel program, how do you go to market? Like what services do you provide? You know, how do you view this partnership and where do you want to take it? Like very transparent questions can provide a lot of clarity and direction as you move forward. You know, especially I'm thinking about tiering right now as I get to my programs and stuff like that. Yeah. And what that can do to influence it. So it just gives me a much more clear perspective on thinking about what we can gather on the front side of a partnership to make it more fruitful, more transparent, and deliver in the long run.
Absolutely. And, you know, I find that most partners are actually very willing to share that information. Yeah. It's just, they don't always get asked. And so because of that, that's maybe a less used muscle on their side, yep. But one that I find they're very willing to flex. It's like, oh, you know, someone wants to learn more about my business so that they can drive more value to me. Sounds awesome, totally. Right? That's great. On the other hand, the last, you know, comment I was going to leave y'all with too is one thing I'm trying to embrace much, much more on my own, but also with my teams, is just treating all of your internal teams like clients, in that, you know, they've all got deliverables they're trying to hit. They've got deadlines they're working against. They've got other things that impact, you know, their work. And so take ownership of doing the things that would make their lives easier, but also benefit you, should be front, you know, top of mind. So like we just spend so much time trying to really understand, are the resources we're providing working? Like, or if they're not working, what's going on? Why didn't you use that SPIF program? Why haven't we attached this thing? And it's not accusatory. It's really just from the perspective of, how do I make this better? So that way you're coming to me asking for like 10 more of these, not 10 less of them. And, you know, I've definitely had programs that have worked and others that haven't. And it's interesting because, you know, to your point about making something a template, you could have two programs that look identical, but one will attach really well and one won't. And the reasons that one does versus one doesn't are very likely very, very different. And so if you like to geek out and be curious about that kind of stuff, I think you can really learn a lot about making a really dynamic program over time.
Amazing. So Matt, just like last time, we always leave our audience with one tactical takeaway that they can implement either today when they're listening to it or tomorrow when they sign on for work. In today's topic, we covered a lot, but what is your number one tactical takeaway so that people can achieve that GTM success with partners? What's your take?
Write an executive summary and get every leader from every group that's going to have a say, benefit, or value from the partnership you're building, and get them to contribute to, read, and participate in that document as you bring that new program to market.
Amazing. And it sounds like they'll sign off on it as well. Do you get them to sign off on the executive summary?
I absolutely do. Yeah, they initial certain points. They will comment in it. That thing is, it's a single most like unifying thing I can do, especially in a remote world. It's on the drive. It's highly accessible. It's available to everybody. And I refer to it over time. So actually when we onboard new team members, I send them a batch of executive summaries. They can understand how we've evolved, how we built partner programs over the last several years.
Love it. Matt, thank you so much for your wisdom. Again, we will definitely have you on another episode of the Howdy Partners podcast. Thank you everyone for listening.